your shelf together with E. Shaver Booksellers.
Hello, I'm Jessica, a lifelong lover of books, wide-ranging reader, fan of obscure British literature, all things Douglas Adams, long sentences, music biographies, the Oxford comma, always up for travel, except during COVID, and of course, Jane Austen.
And I'm Melissa, an eclectic bibliophile and all-around nerd who also loves Jane Austen, comics, and cooking. Together, we run an independent bookstore in Savannah, Georgia. Each episode, we discuss the books we've been reading and recommend.
Well, hello, Melissa.
Hello, Jessica.
It's been a minute.
Yep.
Life.
It always is.
It always is. Well, life happens. Things get busy. Running a small business is not without its time constraints and hiccups.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then it is summer in Savannah, that delightfully humid time of year.
Yeah, it's humid all year here. I don't know if you've recognized this or not. It's a year-round thing.
But it's extra specially humid today, I feel like.
Yeah, it's got a little more spice than normal.
Yes. Yeah. So, Melissa, what have you been reading to take your mind off of the excessive heat outside?
Oh, well, a lot of things, but yes. Let's see. So the first one is... So I was going through the electronic version of Publishers Weekly that they send me on the app. Mm-hmm. And I saw a review for this book, and it seemed interesting. So I picked it up, and it's called Her Many Faces by Nikki Cloak. And it is... it's a mystery thriller book, mm-hmm. And it's about a waitress. She's 22 years old. Her name is Katie Cole. She works at this crazy exclusive private club in London. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning of the book, she has been arrested because four of the men who are members of this club have died there from being poisoned. And she is the person who served them the decanter of alcohol that they drank. So what's interesting about this book is that it is told from five different perspectives, mm-hmm. and the perspectives are five different men in her life. So there's her father, her lawyer, a reporter, a friend of hers, and then a former lover.
Okay.
And so all of the different ways that they're telling the story is supposed to give you a picture of who she really is. But it's interesting because all of them tell a very different story about who she actually is.
Interesting. So do they break it down? Is it chapter by chapter?
Yeah, each chapter is told from a different perspective. And it starts back with her childhood and sort of you see her throughout her life, how she mm-hmm. gets to the point where she is. She had an older brother. Something happens to him that causes her to become very deep into internet conspiracy theories.
Okay.
So she's active on conspiracy theory websites. And so that's part of it. The former lover paints her as... a stalker who's intent on ruining his relationship with his fiance.
So she's not having a very good look at this point.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like all of the stuff that's coming out about her makes her look really bad. So it's an interesting way of sort of deconstructing the male gaze.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will say, I've said this before, but I'm usually pretty good about picking out twists on mm-hmm. things. But this actually was very twisty, and the way that the stories come together and like what actually happened,
mm-hmm.
I did not see it coming. No, I was completely surprised by how this book ended and how everything came together. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking it's a good mystery, but it's a good mystery kind of told in a way that I haven't experienced before, because she never speaks for herself.
Okay. This might be a good one for Mystery Book Club. Mm-hmm. It sounds really good.
Yeah. So it's Her Many Faces by Nikki Cloak.
And when did it come out?
Last month.
Okay. So relatively new.
Yeah, it's pretty new.
Yep. Because there's another one that's coming out in paperback in October, I think, that we had talked about for Mystery Book Group.
Oh, it's The God of the Woods by Liz Moore, right. Which I also read recently, and I wasn't going to talk about that book because I don't think anybody needs me to talk to them about that book, mm-hmm. because that book has just been a behemoth and selling, yeah. selling. But I will say, as good as the hype, I read it in one sitting, and mm-hmm. it is 500 pages.
Yes. Isn't it fun when a book is actually as good as the hype?
Yeah.
It's just, yes, it's a good feeling.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to talk about something completely different. Mm-hmm. Because it's been a minute since we did this, for book club, not this month, but last month, we read Beloved.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a book that I've wanted to read. It's been on my list, and somehow I never read it. It came out in 1987. I actually didn't realize it was that recent. Although 1987 is a
not
ago,
recent.
In my mind, it's yesterday. It was the year I graduated from college, and so
yeah, it's almost 40 years ago.
But I finally read it, and I'm glad I did. I wish that I had almost read it a little earlier, because over the past couple of years, 10 years, I've read Yaa Jassy and Jessamyn Ward and other writers that were quite obviously influenced by this book. So I feel like I read the books that were influenced by this before I read this. And now that I've got a little Faulkner under my belt and Toni Morrison, I feel like I understand their influences better. That said, it is not a novel for the faint of heart. It is dark in very much the sort of Mississippi, Louisiana, Southern Gulf way, very much like Faulkner. And it takes place right after the Civil War, although there are flashbacks in time to when they were enslaved. And I won't go too deeply in it because it's something you could talk about for quite a long time, but I will say it is worth reading. I thought it was beautifully written, but it is unrelentingly dark, as books dealing with this kind of subject matter tend to be.
Yeah, there are moments in it, though, that are very stream of consciousness,
yes.
and a little incoherent.
If you like Faulkner, then this is a book for you. If you do not like Virginia Woolf and Faulkner, this may not be the book for you. There's definitely stream of consciousness in it. The main character, it has been enslaved and escapes with her children. Throughout the book, you realize what's happened to her children. Beloved was one of her children, and there's sort of a supernatural aspect to this book as well, so they live in a house that is haunted. Is it really haunted? Is it not haunted? Is it the spirit of all the evil things that have happened to them coming back to haunt them? That's kind of the question you're asking yourself throughout the book. But the storyline is the main character is enslaved. She was allowed to marry at this plantation, and then takes her children to freedom over the river to Cincinnati to stay with her husband's mother. But it's every time that she finds even a little bit of happiness, this all comes back and haunts her. Ultimately, a kind of strange child comes and lives with them who calls herself Beloved, and that really makes everyone in the story come to be forced to look back on everything that's happened to
them.
But
she's not really a child. She's a young woman.
Yeah. A young woman, but behaves very childishly in the book. It won the National Book Award. It won the Pulitzer Prize for fiction. I definitely think it's a book that probably should be read more in college than in high school.
Yeah.
And, but I would, if you're interested in this history, if you are a fan of Faulkner, if you are a fan of Jessamyn Ward, then this is worth putting in to your reading list. And it is a book you can kind of pick up and put down. I read it in one sitting, more or less, just to stay with the storyline. Melissa is saying, no, it's not a book you can pick up and put down.
No, I mean, because I feel like there are, because of the stream of consciousness and the moments where it is really difficult to make sense of some of the things, I don't feel like it's something you can dip in and out of easily.
Right. I had to put it down because it just became a little intense for me and I needed an hour or two break from it, or I needed to pick it back up the next day because
but you just said you read it in one sitting.
Well, I did. It was an interrupted sitting over a day, but I did. I actually did go ahead and work my way through it. But I did have to put it down for a minute and go do something else and then come back to it. So when I say dip in and out of it, I guess not over a series of months, but you might need to put it down for a second and digest what you've just read and then pick it back up again.
Or just go real quickly, like ripping a Band-Aid off, which is how I read it.
Yes. There are some beautiful sentences in there. Anyway, Beloved, Toni Morrison, a classic, and I think worth your time.
Okay. Well, this is going to be nothing like that. Yes. So I read several years ago at this point, and I'm pretty sure I talked about it on this podcast several years ago at this point, a book called Senlin Ascends that was by Josiah Bancroft. That book actually was like a whole 4-book series. So he's got a new series that he started. And the first one is called The Hexologists. And I think this book is actually, I would say, more accessible than Senlin Ascends. Not that Senlin Ascends was difficult to read. It was very long and sort of dense. And all of the books in that series are very long and sort of dense. Mm-hmm. He has a very good vocabulary and he uses it. Mm-hmm. But this one is,
I like
it too. This one is a fantasy mystery novel. So the two main characters are a married couple. It's Iz and Warren Willby. And Iz is a hexologist, which is a type of magic user. She does hexes, which in the book you have to basically draw sort of a configuration and then something happens. Like, my favorite hex in it is the reversal one, and she uses it on Warren when he puts his shirt on backwards. Like, she hexes
I wish
him.
I had that
no, it's great. So Warren is not magical, or if he is, it is not explained in this book, but he is very, very personable in a way that isn't. So when they're investigating things, he can kind of ingratiate himself with people and people will talk to him and he can make friends with anybody, which is a great skill to have when your wife is not that person. Mm-hmm. So the book starts with them being asked to investigate a case on behalf of the crown. Mm-hmm. And so the world that this is set in is almost like Victorian England, if magic existed and there were some kind of supernatural elements to it, but it's not London. It is not referred to as London. It's a different world. Mm-hmm. So Iz and Warren are not fans necessarily of the monarchy, but they will take this case and are very clear that if what they find embarrasses the crown, they're not going to shy away from telling the truth. Like, mm-hmm. they will take this case and they will solve it to the best of their abilities. So basically, the king is acting very odd. He's he's requested to be baked alive into a cake.
Okay, that's a problem.
Yeah. But the weird behavior has been sparked by him receiving this letter basically implying that he has an illegitimate child who is out there and wants to be recognized.
Okay.
So it's almost a blackmail letter. And the letter is sealed with the signet ring that the king had when he was the prince, which has been lost.
Okay.
And so that's kind of the crux of the story, is they're trying to figure out if this is a legitimate claim, like what, and then what is causing the king to act the way that he's acting. So there's a lot in this book, and he does a lot with, you know, there's been a war recently and there's a bunch of soldiers who are veterans of the war and now are not being treated well by the government. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like class struggles in this society. There's environmental concerns because they have, they call it carp snow, mm-hmm. Which is basically a byproduct of the, fuel that they're using to power.
So sort of like acid rain or the extreme fogs that they had in London. Yes. That were because of industrialization.
Right. But this is like this weird sort of like ashy snow that smells fishy. Ew. Which sounds miserable.
Yeah. Okay. I'll take our humidity.
But it's really fun. It's just quirky and whimsical. Mm-hmm. I love the characters. Iz has this old bag that was given to her by her father, and she can pull out of it. Like, it's a portal to this storage facility of all these relics that he's mm-hmm. collected over his life. And so she can, you know, pull out things from this bag to help her. There's a dragon that lives in there who's amazing.
Oh, is he going to beat out my other favorite
he
dragon?
He is actually my new favorite dragon. His name is Felivox, and he's fabulous.
I may have to read this. I love a dragon.
But it's because it is the first one, in it ends satisfactorily. Like, the mystery in this book is solved in this book.
So it doesn't leave you on a
cliffhanger. No, it doesn't leave you on a cliffhanger, but there is a larger story mm-hmm. that it is opening up in this book. But lots of great secondary characters, interesting magical system. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just a lot of fun. So The Hexologist by Josiah Bancroft, and the second book in the series comes out in September.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
Okay, well, I have something completely different, although I'm still thinking about Beloved because I don't really feel like I did it justice. But anyway, I'll leave it be.
Moving on.
Moving on, I guess. So something completely different. I recently listened to on a car trip Carl Hyacinth's new book, Fever Beach, which does not disappoint. It is classic Hyacinth. It takes place in Florida with all of its Florida weirdness. This one is very funny in places. It really takes on sort of the divided culture and polarization in America right now, but with a definite sense of humor, although it can be a very dark sense of humor in places. It starts out in Florida. One of the main characters, Dale Figo, picks up a hitchhiker and takes him along in his truck into this gated community that he has managed to get a pass into, and is trying to initiate him to get him to help throw out baggies that are filled with sand and then hate tracts about how the Holocaust, which is misspelled in his hate tract, wasn't real. And he started his own white supremacist group because he's been thrown out of all the other ones due to a rather tragic mishap on January 6th when he was at the Capitol and he went to a statue and covered it in fecal matter. And it turns out the statue was not actually someone from the federal government, but a Confederate general.
So they don't like that.
They didn't like that. So he got kicked out of the Sons of Liberty and the Proud Boys and everything else. So he started his own group called Strokers for Liberty, with a Z. And the shenanigans began. He doesn't think things out all the way.
Clearly.
He's living in a condominium that his mom has bought for him, and he has to take on a roommate to make ends meet. And so his roommate, actually, is another character in the story, Vita, and she has come to Florida after a bad divorce, and she is working for this couple at the Mink Foundation. And they give out donations. They like to have their name on pretty much everything. And they insist on a portrait of them being put wherever their name is put. So they get involved with a congressman who's up for re-election. And he starts a charity which is really just to funnel money. And it's called the Wee Hammers, where he's going to have children building homes, like Habitat for Humanity, but he's going to teach them sort of building skills. But they're between the ages of like 8 and 12 or 13. So all of this ultimately comes together. It doesn't go well for everyone, but it does go well for some people. Twilly, who ends up going out with Viva a little bit, gets involved in this. He has some anger management problems, but he's an environmentalist, and he wants to kind of keep an eye on all this right-wing stuff that's going on. And so, yeah, it's just crazy and a lot of fun in only the way that Florida can be. Bizarre and fun. So if you like Carl Hiaasen, this book absolutely does not disappoint and is laugh-out-loud funny. And it's a lot of fun to listen to on a road trip. It really keeps your attention as you're driving as well. So.
Okay.
So there you go.
All right. So next thing I had is actually a debut novel, and it is called The Bombshell by Darrow Farr. And so this one, I had seen the cover of it when it came out, and was intrigued by it. And then I read it for a bookseller discussion group that I'm in, and was really good. So it is inspired by Patty Hearst. Mm-hmm. So it is.
Oh, you've told me about this one. It sounds really good.
Yeah. So it happens in the early 90s in Corsica. So Severine is the main character. She is sort of a bored and lonely 17-year-old. She's the daughter of a French politician and an American poet. Mm-hmm. She is at the point where she's studying for exams to see about going to college. And what she really wants is to be an actress. And she's just like, she doesn't get along with most of the kids her age. She's had sort of falling outs with her friends where they're not getting along. And her dad is stationed in Corsica. They have moved there from Paris, so she hasn't been in Corsica that long and doesn't really love it there. So one night she's out riding her bicycle and she's kidnapped by a militant group who wants Corsican independence. And it was interesting reading about this because their complaints were basically that Corsica has become a place where wealthy people come and build these giant homes. And then they have this big tourist trade that all of the people who live in Corsica work as a part of, but they can't really afford to live there. Mm-hmm. And it's very similar to sometimes what happens in Savannah with our economy and how based on tourism it is and just
housing prices and Airbnbs and lack of affordable housing and people not being able to live in the neighborhoods where they work. So there's long commutes without necessarily good public transportation.
Yeah. So all those things. So initially the group that kidnaps her, their plan is they will ask for a ransom of 5 million francs. And then they also want the release of one of their compatriots from prison. Mm-hmm. And they get the ransom money from Severin's family, but the government refuses to release the man who's in prison. So they sort of fumble her going back to her family, and she ends up being with them much longer than they anticipate. They're keeping her in this farmhouse that's sort of out away from everything, and it's surrounded by this sort of harsh natural environment that she can't just run and get away because she won't survive out there. So she decides that she's going to manipulate these three men who are holding her and get them to release her by becoming, like, ingratiating herself with them.
The perfect prisoner?
Yes. And so she starts helping on the farm with one of the guys, and he very quickly develops a crush on her. Mm-hmm. She starts helping the one guy cook and starts just talking with him. And then the third guy, who is really sort of the leader of this group at this point, starts teaching her about political philosophy, and he starts making her read things, and then they'll discuss it together. And in the course of this, she becomes radicalized and starts believing in their cause. And eventually she becomes the face of their group. So she starts filming these sort of diatribes, her messages, and they start releasing them. She starts pushing them to be more active and do things like bombings and all this stuff.
Okay.
And it's interesting because it is never 100% clear if her motivation is that she actually believes these things, what they're standing for, or is it because she has a huge crush on the guy who's the leader and she wants to impress him by doing these things? Because she keeps talking the whole time about how her father is a politician and he wants good things to happen. So, like, there's sort of a struggle internally with her. And then it also, is it that she just enjoys the notoriety that's become, like, that she's known because of this? People know who she is. Young girls start dressing like her.
Interesting.
It's a very strange coming of age story.
Do you hear anything from her family at all? Their point of view, or?
No, it's not told from multiple points of view.
It's just her.
The first house that they choose to bomb, because they're like, it's one of the wealthy landowners that, she says it's because the family has a tie to weapons manufacturing and they've been involved in kind of keeping down people in all these countries around the world. But it turns out she has a history with the son of the family that did not go well. So
who's manipulating who?
Exactly. Okay. It's very interesting. I just thought it was really well done. It's a very propulsive book. Like, you will just keep reading. And she is a very messy and difficult character, okay, which I enjoyed about it.
Okay. So you have sort of a love-hate relationship with her?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
More fascinated by...
Yeah. And what was the name of the book again?
It's called The Bombshell.
The Bombshell.
By Darrow Farr.
And it's already out?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, it sounds very good. Well, I'm going to go into one we just read for our mystery book club, The Broken Girls, which is by Simone St. James. And this is the first one I've read by her. And I really enjoyed it. And it was a very good discussion. It's the story of these, it's told in dual narratives. And it's a story of this boarding school, which in the beginning of the book has been abandoned, basically. It sat empty since 1979 when it closed down. But even prior to that, it never fit in well with the town in Vermont where it is. It was always sort of a creepy place. It was considered sort of the boarding school for more troubled girls, or the boarding school of last resort. And so the main character that we start with, sister, had been murdered, and she had been left in the field of this boarding school. Fiona is the main character's name, and someone had been arrested for it, her boyfriend at the time. But 20 years later, there's just still questions about the case, and Fiona can't let it go. Her father has kind of become more of a recluse. Her mother has died in the meantime, and she just kind of is at loose ends. And so she decides, so the boarding school is getting ready to be redone, and she decides that she wants to write a story about this. Part of it is linked to her sister. Part of it is she's wondering why on earth anyone would want to take the time to restore this boarding school, which had never been beloved by anyone as far as she could tell. And so, and she is dating a police officer at the time, too. And their relationship is interesting because of the sort of rift between journalism and police work. So they have an interesting relationship. The second timeline is in the 1950s, and it's four girls who have made friends in this boarding school. They've all been sent there for different reasons: Katie, Roberta, Cece, and Sonia. And then there's also a ghost in it, and the ghost is Mary Hand. And Mary sort of haunts the place, and the girls and the teachers all see her. She doesn't make any attempt to make the ghost not real or explain it away in the book. The ghost is the ghost. And Mary is sort of an echo chamber, so she kind of throws your worst fears back at you. So the girls are there for different reasons. Sonia doesn't really have a family. She came over from France. She's very frail, and she has a history that you go more into later, but she's had a very sad past, and this is right after World War II. None of her family is left. Cece and Roberta and Katie are there for different reasons. One of them is the illegitimate daughter of a housekeeper from the father is very wealthy, and he wants to take care of her but won't acknowledge her. He acknowledges her as her daughter, but she's going to spend most of her life in boarding schools because he's not going to raise her in his home. And then one of them was almost raped, and it was the 1950s, and her family, she was very beautiful and headstrong, and her family is like, you're just trouble, and this is all your fault. And so they send her away. And the other one has witnessed her uncle almost killing himself, which she stops, and she can't speak for a while, and she has to go to a psychiatrist, and her parents are horrified by that, so they send her away to boarding school. So the girls kind of trauma bond in this boarding school. And you go chapter to chapter back and forth between the two timelines, ultimately trying to not only look at Fiona's sister's case, but you're also looking at when they start redoing the school in the very beginning of the book, they find a female body in the well that has been there since the 1950s. And so you're solving two mysteries at once, and the mystery of why anybody would want to redo the school. And I really enjoyed this one. It was a lot of fun. There were some twists in it. You know, I kept trying to decide how I thought it was going to end, and I was wrong on most of it. So that was fun. Mm-hmm. It very much held my interest, and it has a lot to say about female friendships and also the powerlessness of these girls in the 1950s and women's voices not being listened to or heard, and kind of how disposable they were. So I would recommend it. It was a very good read, and I'm looking forward to reading more by Simone St. James, but The Broken Girls.
Okay.
Yeah.
The last thing that I had is a book that is coming out this month in August. It's called My Other Heart by Emma Nanami Strenner. So it starts out in 1998, there's a woman named Mimi. She is Vietnamese. She had come to the U.S. not legally. While she's there, she becomes pregnant, has a child, and she decides she's going to take her daughter back to Vietnam because she'll be able to give them a better life there than struggling as an illegal immigrant in the United States. Mm-hmm. So they're at the airport in Philadelphia waiting for their flight. The baby is like a little over a year old at this point and is just sort of playing on the floor. Mimi gets up to throw something away. She comes back and her daughter is gone. And because she doesn't speak English, nobody understands what she's trying to say. She's hysterical. They end up essentially drugging her and getting her sedate, putting her on her flight, and sending her back to Vietnam without her child. Nothing happens. So she's now back in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And she has no idea what's happened to her kid. So it then flashes forward to 2015, and you've got these two girls who are best friends, and they're getting ready to graduate from high school when the book starts, and they are trying to decide what they're going to do the summer before college starts. And so one is Sabrina. Sabrina is the daughter of a single mother who's a working class Chinese immigrant. She has never really felt connected to her Chinese roots. She doesn't know any of her mother's family. She just knows her mom, mm-hmm. right? And so she has saved up money from tutoring and all these odd jobs that she's taken to make ends meet. She saved up enough money that she wants to go to China and figure out who she is. So she asks her mother about getting her a passport. Her mother says she's taking care of it. Mm-hmm. And then a pipe bursts in their apartment. They can't get hold of their landlord. They need to have it fixed. So all mm-hmm. the money Sabrina had for her trip has gone to fix this pipe, so she can't go on the trip. So Kit, who is her best friend, is the adopted daughter of a wealthy couple. Kit is seemingly mixed race. Mm-hmm. One of her biological parents was Asian. She doesn't know anything about them. It was a closed adoption. Mm-hmm. So once when Sabrina tells her that she's going to go on this trip to China, Kit decides, oh, I'm going to go and find out who I am too. And she decides that she's part Japanese. And so asks her parents to give her a trip to Japan. And her parents set the whole thing up, send her to go live with a friend of theirs in Japan who is a diplomat, who she can stay with for the summer. They have two kids around her age. So Kit gets to go on this trip and figure out her heritage. In the meantime, Sabrina is still at home. She takes this internship working with an Asian woman who is a basically is a non a pro bono lawyer who works on behalf of people of Asian descent, helping them with all kinds of things.
Right.
And so she sort of is mentoring Sabrina over the summer and is sort of teaching her how to be stronger and how to find out about her roots. At the same time, you get Mimi's story of what Mimi has been doing in Vietnam and how she's been living. And, she is constantly working towards trying to get back to the United States so she can find her daughter. Mm-hmm. And so she gets back there by working for a wealthy American family who she had worked for in Vietnam. They're moving back to the U.S. They want her to come with her them because they can't survive without her, basically. Mm-hmm. And through some internet sleuthing that a friend of her helps with, she has a list now of babies of Asian descent that were adopted by families in Philadelphia.
Okay. And go from there.
And then you go from there.
Intrigue.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds very good.
It is really good. I mean, it's an interesting look at identity and sort of belonging and not feeling like you fit even with the family that you've been raised in, and just the lengths people will go to for love.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really good. The beginning of it is very hard.
Can't even imagine.
Yeah.
But. Yeah. Well, the next book I thought you and I could kind of talk about together because we both read it.
Sure.
And both really enjoyed it. My Friends by Hisham Mattar, which we read for our Renowned Reads book club. And it's just an amazing book. Mm-hmm. It is so good.
It was long-listed for the Booker Prize, but it won it was also long-listed for the National Book Award, I believe.
Yeah.
But it won the Orwell Prize for political fiction, which is why we read it.
And we realized we had actually read his book, The Return, which won the Pulitzer Prize years ago for another book club we had, one of our first book clubs.
Yeah, and I had actually just a few weeks before reading, my friends had read his first book, In the Country of Men, which I think won the Booker Prize. But it was really good.
It was shortlisted
for the Booker Prize. But he's just an incredible writer. He's of Libyan descent, but has lived in London and New York.
And yes, and this book is very much about dysphoria and not being able to go home again to your homeland.
Yeah,
and the relationship.
But it's kind of told, it's all told in one, he's walking through London and sort of the whole story is him remembering as he's on this walk, going through a place that he usually avoids. But it's kind of told, he tells this story through the lens of two important friendships in his life. And while it's about those relationships, it's about relationships on so many different levels. Like, it's the relationship with his family, the relationship with his country, mm-hmm. with what home means to him, what freedom means to him. There's just a lot happening in it.
There is, even though it's also quiet and meditative. Mm-hmm. And the writing is beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, I probably will reread this book, and I might have a highlighter or a pen with me, because there are just so many sentences you want to commit to memory in there.
Well, I feel like if I were to do that, it would be like when I did that with the book Exit West, where I literally underlined every sentence in the book. The writing is beautiful. But so the main character, Khalid, goes to study in Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. And this is right when Gaddafi has come to power in Libya. And so he and a friend that he makes while studying there go to London to mm-hmm. participate in a protest that is happening outside the Libyan embassy in London.
And it's all based on events that actually happened.
Yeah, so this is in 1984. And so at this protest, someone inside the Libyan embassy opens fire on the protesters, mm-hmm. and Khalid and his friend are both shot.
They are both shot. There is only one person who loses their life, which is actually a British police officer, mm-hmm. a female police officer. But Khalid is the most injured of the group and spends the most time in the hospital. And after this happens, his identity is unknown to the Libyan government. If he were to go home, they would discover it. Mm-hmm. So he has to keep all of this hidden from his parents, and he can never really explain to, and they have a close family relationship.
Yeah.
So he's not estranged from his family in any way, but then he can't explain to them why he can't come home. So he has to continuously make up stories about.
Well, and they still think he's in Edinburgh studying. He's in London. He can never be truly honest with them about what he's doing with his life, where he is, why he's not coming home. Mm-hmm.
And you feel like they ultimately have an understanding.
Yeah. And then he becomes friends later with a writer who also is sort of in exile because he wrote something when he was younger mm-hmm. that has caused him to be unable to go home.
Right. And his father also has had to denounce him. Mm-hmm. And it's a very complicated relationship with the country. And a lot of it centers around this short story that the writer wrote about a man being eaten alive by a cat, bit by bit, mm-hmm. Which is a pretty interesting story that I still think about, because they really kind of tell you most of that story, and you hear it as though, well, you don't hear it, you're reading it, but it's a radio broadcast, and that just, it plays a continuing role throughout the story.
Mm-hmm. It's really hard to describe mm-hmm. it fully. I mean, because there is a lot going on, but also it's like you said, it's kind of slow and meditative. But if you want something that the writing is just going to just stop you in your tracks, and also a story that is just has so much going on, like is really kind of so encompassing of so many different things.
But it's also very relevant to what's going on in the world today.
Oh, yeah.
There's just a lot in there. And there's so many different historical rabbit holes that you can go down. I have never been extremely familiar with the history of Libya. And so I feel like through the book, The Return, and then this book, I've learned a lot more about that time, which I actually lived through. But of course, and I know as Americans, we paid some attention to it, but this really shines a spotlight on it.
Yeah. And in The Country of Men, which is his first novel, it also takes place when Gaddafi has come to power in Libya, but it's told through the eyes of a child who's living there, mm-hmm. and his father is a dissident, and sort of what that looks like, and mm-hmm. you know, the fear of the fear that this country lived under of being turned in by people, and what happens, and there's, you know, interrogations happening, like they broadcast them on TV. Mm-hmm. It's
which there's some of that in this
as well. Yeah.
And then in his book, The Return, it's about the prison system and it being liberated, and just the horror of mm-hmm. all of that. I would very much recommend this. It is worth your time. Mm-hmm. All of his books, I think.
Yeah, he's a really beautiful writer. And this one is interesting because the chapters are very short. Mm-hmm. So they're almost like little vignettes,
But they're so well, I mean, someone who can write with that kind of concise precision and convey so much in such, you know, 5 or 6 paragraphs, I think there's a certain genius to that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so what are you currently reading?
A couple of different things. Mm-hmm. So I'm reading The Names, mm-hmm. Which Melissa has already talked about on this podcast. And I am listening to actually the first one in a series. I read the second one first. It's a mystery. And they're translated from German, and it is Sheep Solving the Mystery. And the one I'm reading right now is Three Bags Full, which is the first one that takes place in Ireland. And the sheep shepherd has been murdered, and they are trying to figure out what happened to George, because he was a very good shepherd.
Well, sure.
So it goes into a lot of this Irish small town politics and personalities and everything. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, I'm getting ready to go to a conference, and I'm having dinner with the lovely people at Europa who mm-hmm. Publish fabulous books. So the one that I'm currently reading is one of theirs that's coming out in September. It's called Amanda, and it's written by H.S. Cross, who is mm-hmm. actually an author who lives in Savannah. We actually hosted her for a book signing for her book Wilberforce when that came out. So this is historical fiction. It's set after World War I in Oxford and London, and it's dealing with shell-shocked soldiers and just people with broken spirits. Yeah, and I'm not very far into it at this point, probably only like 30 pages. So mm-hmm. It's good so far, though. And I am almost finished mm-hmm. reading Emma out loud for my Jane Austen read alouds. So getting ready to move into Mansfield Park, which will be interesting because my husband has never read that one. Mm-hmm. He has seen the movie, like we went to Kirby Hall, which was where the movie was filmed. Mm-hmm. We watched the movie, but I'll be curious to see what he thinks about Mansfield.
I'll be curious to see what he thinks about it. We just read the real Jane Austen. The real Jane Austen?
Yeah.
For book group, for our Jane Austen book group, which spent a lot of time on Mansfield Park and the merits of Mansfield Park, which is unusual on books about Jane Austen.
I mean, I will admit that there is a lot happening in Mansfield Park, probably more more happening in it that relates to what's going on in the world around mm-hmm. Jane Austen than a lot of her other books.
I think she does make more of a political stance in it than yeah. any of her other books. And there's another really good article by Lauren Groff, which I think I sent you, about the merits of reading Mansfield Park. So I think I may dive into Mansfield Park again and Fanny is a difficult character.
Well,
everyone
it's like
admits
Fanny and Edmund both are difficult characters. Although there are several fascinating characters in the book. Like I think mm-hmm. like the Crawfords may be her most interesting characters that she's ever written.
Well, and Aunt Norris is by far her most villainous villain. Mm. Just on the psychological warfare that she throws out.
I don't know. Wickham and Willoughby are pretty villainy.
They are pretty villainy. It's her most villainous female villain.
Yeah. I mean, Lady Catherine is not a pleasant human. But
no, but I think that Mrs. Norris has a specific level of cruelty that...
Yeah.
Yeah. But we could talk about that for hours.
That could be a whole podcast episode.
Yes.
All right. Well, so if you are reading along for the reading challenge that we're doing this year, the August prompt is to read a book set in a country you'd like to visit. Mm-hmm. So that one can be a lot of fun.
Yes.
I was looking for books set in Italy because it is a country that I have not been to and that I would like to visit and hopefully will be soon visiting. Mm-hmm. But there was one that struck my interest that was called The Bookseller of Venice.
Oh,
it's by Giovanni Montanaro. And it was pretty new. It was translated into English in 2024. And it is about, there was a flood that happened where the waters rose in Venice by 180 centimeters
mm-hmm.
And just the problems that caused with homes and booksellers and, you know, because books and water do not go together.
No.
Yeah.
No. Well, I have not picked one out yet, but I have been to Italy, but just I have not seen as much of it as I would like to. There's so many countries on the list.
Yeah, I mean, there's,
I wanna go.
There's
I know.
Not really many places in the world that I haven't been that I wouldn't like to go to. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
All right. But that's a great end of summer challenge.
Yeah, it's true. All right. Well, and if you are participating in that, be sure to post as you complete the challenge and mm-hmm. tag us on Instagram because if you complete it, you are eligible for a gift card mm-hmm. that we will give out to one lucky reader at the end of the year. And again, you don't have to complete it like each month. You don't have to, just as long as you get it finished by the end of the year
right.
is all we're looking for. Because we understand life happens.
It does. Uh-huh. Also, have a look at our new website. There, we have some exciting events coming up in October. That
we have some good events happening in August too. We don't usually do events in August, but we had a couple that we couldn't say no to.
Mm-hmm. So we've got some really fun events coming up. So keep an eye on that, and just keep reading your books out there.
All right. Bye.
Bye.